Today's shiur in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Erevin, Daf Yud Zayin. And we begin on the second line from the top. We're in the middle of a discussion that we began yesterday with various opinions as to how well a single, either horizontal or vertical type of a mechitza works. We had a machlokas between a Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda. We had a machlokas between a Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda's son, Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda. And we went through some of the details of this machlokas yesterday. So we pick up on the second line, Yud Zayin Omer Aleph, with the words, Omer Rav Gidl, Omer Rav. Rav Gidl is one of the major Talmidim of Rav. We find him mentioned throughout Shas as being a Talmud of Rav. He's not as well known as some of the other great Talmidim of Rav, Rav Yehuda, Rav Huna, etc. But we find him many, many times in Shas. Omer Rav Gidl, Omer Rav. Shlosha b'chomish, Asurin. B'sheva mutar. He makes this enigmatic statement that sometimes you can have three people. Yesterday we defined the three people turns it from an individual into a shayara. So with the shayara, with the caravan, there were certain coolers that you had, and that included, even according to Yosef Yehuda, that you're allowed six base saw. And here we find that Rav Gidl Marav says that sometimes, even though you have three people, even five base saw will be no good, asurin. And yet, at other times, b'sheva, even though you have three people, you could have seven base saw, and it's mutarin. So this is a very enigmatic statement. The Gemara says, Armulei, the Talmidim master of Gidl, Amar Rav Hachi, did Rav really say this? It doesn't seem to go in accord with anything that we learned. So Amaluhush, Rav Gidl says back to them, I swear, Rav says, Loshim Shvuho, Araisa, by the Torah, by the Nevi'im, by Ksuvim, by Tanakh, the Omer Rav Hochi, that in fact Rav did make such an enigmatic statement, and now we have to understand what exactly Rav was saying. So Gemara says, Omer Rav Ashi, Rav Ashi says, what's your problem? My kasha. Rav's statement can be easily understood in the following way. Duma Hochi Komar, this is what Rav said. Normally, Hutzuchu L'sheish V'kifu B'sheva, if in fact three people are entitled to six, even according to the more Machmir opinion, and they enclose an area that is seven base saw, so since there aren't an excess of two base saw, it's good. Afilu b'sheva mutarim. They technically should only have done six, but since they didn't do eight, they only did seven, so that's allowed as well, because you need to have more than two base saw than what they were entitled to for these minor types of mechitzas, these inferior types of mechitzas that only have either horizontal or vertical, to be a problem. So since they didn't have more than two base saw, they're entitled to six, and they only made it seven, so therefore it's still good. However, lo hutzuchu el l'chomesh, if, now that gets the gears that we have, if they in fact only needed five, but they were surrounding an area of seven base saw, so then, in this situation, afilu b'chomesh asur, then even the five aren't good because they went too far. In other words, no area here can be carried, even though technically they could have carried in five, but since they made seven, it's no good. That's the gears that we have. The Vilna Gaon brings down a different gears. He says, Lo hitzuchu ela l'shalosh, that if they only really needed three base saw, so in this situation, they then made v'kifu, and the Vilna Gaon deletes the word b'sheva, so they made more than they needed, so then afilu b'chamesh asurim, then even if they enclosed an area of five base saw, it wouldn't be allowed. The bottom line, I think, between the gears that we have and the Vilna Gaon's gears is that they're not allowed to have more than two above what they would be entitled to have. And that's what Rav Ashi says was Rav's enigmatic statement. It really isn't so enigmatic. As long as there aren't an excess of two base saw to what they're either entitled to or what they need, so then it's no problem. And that's why sometimes seven could be good, but sometimes five could be no good based upon what I just said. More questions and says, wait a second, Eloha Diktoni, but that which we learned in the rest of the Braise continued and said, Ubavach loye base sosayim ponui, that you can't have two open areas, so isn't this talking about my lab ponim yodim? Isn't it talking about that you don't have a person for those last two base saw? Rashi explains, kigon shlosha, if you had three people, shekifu ches soim, the three were entitled to six, but instead they made eight. The chiyovis to call chad base sosayim, when each one gets his entitlement to two base saw, so then akate poshulu base sosayim ponui below balim. That's why eight is the last two are without an owner. Avol Zayin, when it's only seven, so low, then you don't have a problem. The Chiyov is based on Zayin L'Kol Chad, when each of the three people is entitled to two Beis Saw, that's a total of six. Lo partially a L'Chad Beis Saw below Balam, so only one is left, and that's why it's good. So isn't that what we're talking about? And therefore, when Rav said that sometimes five is no good, how come? They're entitled to up to eight, technically. They're entitled to really six, and plus the extra, under two. So why did Rav say that it's no good for five? So Gemara says, lo, ponui mikelim. The Gemara says, it means that there's nothing in those two areas. As Rashi says, klomar, sheyesh bein ha-mechitzos beis sasayim ponui. There is an open area within the mechitzos, shelo yitzrichlo, that there was absolutely no need for it. There's nothing in there. Even though they're three people, then even though they're three people, they just aren't automatically entitled to six. They're entitled to their needs. And if their needs can be satisfied with less than the amount that they would theoretically be entitled to, they can be satisfied with less than six. They only need, for example, three. V'hikifu dalit soyim. In this situation, nami botli mechitzos. They're not allowed to enclose more than they need. That's why Rav said that even though they may have been entitled to six, or really up to eight, but if they didn't need it, they only needed three, and they encircled five, so then that's more than they needed, and they're not allowed to. That really concludes yesterday's shir, and now we enter into a new discussion where the Gemara says Itmar. We learned in the Beis Medrash that if you started off with Shlosha at the beginning of Shabbos, there were three people, so then everybody says you're entitled to two beis saw for each one of them. And now, umei se'achon mehem. And during Shabbos, one of them dies. So now, you're not entitled to more than two beis saw, because only two people, which we said is entitled to two beis saw. When you have three people, it's a shayara, and now they're entitled to six beis saw. So how do we view this situation? Do we say, well, they started off okay, and therefore you can continue throughout the Shabbos? Or do we say, no, right now, they don't have the right number of people, and right now, it goes from being good to being no good? That's the Gemara's question. We'll spend a lot of time discussing this. Similarly, the exact opposite scenario. You started off with two people, Shnayim, and now a third person comes along in the middle of Shabbos. V'nitos v'aleim. So now, they're originally only entitled to two beis saw. Do we say that they're still only entitled to two beis saw, even though a third person came? Or do we say, no, in the middle of Shabbos, now they have a third person, they're entitled to six beis saw. So Shnayim, v'nitos v'aleim, what is the halacha? So in both of these scenarios, where they started off with three and went down to two, or they started off with two and went up to three, the question is, do we view it from the beginning of Shabbos, or do we view a change that occurred in the middle of Shabbos, either for better or for worse? And this is a machlokas, Rav Huna ber Yitzchak. There's a major machlokas over here between these two great Amoraim, Rav Huna and Rav Yitzchak. One of them says, we don't know which one says which, Chadamar Shabbos Goremes. Whatever it was at the beginning of Shabbos, that determines it. As Rashi says, Shloshev, he started off with three, Umeis Echad Mehen, and then one passes away, Hoil the Goremes Shabbos Lahatir, since at the start of Shabbos it was permissible, Mutarim Ashnayim, the two people can use the entire area that they were originally allowed to, because at the start of Shabbos, that's what we look at. That's the opinion of one of them, either Rav Huna or Rav Yitzchak. Shabbos Goremes. The other one, we don't know which one yet, the Chadamar, Diorin Gormin. You look at the number of people there. As Rashi says, if you had three, Umeis Echad Mehem, so in this situation, you're not allowed to use the entire area that you could use beforehand, and you have to limit it now to the base saw, to two base saw. Now, we don't know who said which. So Gemara says, let us assume the Rav Huna who the Omar Shabbos Goremes, that in fact Rav Huna is the opinion that says you look at Shabbos at the beginning of Shabbos, that determines for the rest of the Shabbos. Where do we see this from? The Omar Abba, because Rabba tells us, and he asked this, Boy me Rav Huna, it was asked from Rav Huna, or Boy me Rav Yehuda, it was asked of Rav Yehuda, these two great Amorayim who are Tamidim of Rav, they were asked, Irev Derech HaPesach, if you have two courtyards, we haven't learned this yet, but we'll learn this in Mitzvah Shem and the Masech. The two courtyards together, each enclosed, so you're not allowed to carry from one courtyard into the other courtyard, midirabbanim, midiraisa, it's all the Rishus HaYachid. The rabbi said, this is potentially problematic, it's going to lead people to carry into Rishus HaRabim, so you can't carry from one courtyard into another courtyard unless you meet two criteria. Number one is you have to make an Eruv Chatzeros, you have to have the set number of meals that are set up, the box of matzahs that we always talk about, that makes an air between them, and there has to be an opening, a connection between these two courtyards that you could travel from one to the other. So they did this. They had an air of Chatzeros, and there was a passageway from one courtyard to the other courtyard. So you're allowed to carry at the start of Shabbos from courtyard A into courtyard B and back and vice versa, back and forth. But then, during the middle of Shabbos, what happened? V'nistama Pesach. And you had this Pesach, the Erev Derech HaPesach, V'nistama Pesach. They had a doorway, and the doorway got closed off. There was a wall that tumbled down. Or Derech HaChalon, they had a window. That was perfectly good, as long as it's 4 Tvachim by 4 Tvachim. So the size of the window is now a Pesach. But the window got closed off. V'nistama Chalon. Mahu. What is the halacha in this situation? So this was the question that Rabba says was asked to Rav Huna and to Rav Yehuda, the Amar Li, and they said back to me, Shabbos, hold the hutra, hutra. So we see that Rav Huna answered back to Rabba that you look at it from the start of Shabbos. at the start of Shabbos, there was a Pesach in between them, and therefore you can carry from one courtyard to the other courtyard, even if that Pesach become closed off, or even if the window, which was the Pesach, got closed off. Obviously, you still have to have a way to travel from one to the other, so you carried it, let's say, over the top. There was a wall that was 10 tefachim high, so you can pass stuff over it. There was a Pesach in there, and that Pesach got closed off. Nevertheless, you can still carry from one yard into the other yard. Who said this? Rav Yehuda and Rav Huna. So Tistayim, this is a good proof that Rav Yehuda and Rav Huna both hold like this. So if it was Rav Huna, so then he holds, you look at Shabbos, it must be the Rav Yitzchak says, you look at the Diurim. Tistayim, that's a good raya. Gemara continues and says that this machlokes between Rav Huna and Rav Yitzchak, let us say that these Amoraim are arguing in this different machlokes of Tanoim, that's the same machlokes in the Tanoim as these two Amoraim. Lema Rav Huna, Rav Yitzchak, bepluks of the Rav Yossi, Rav Yehuda kamifligi. This is Rabbi Yehuda the Tana. So Rabbi Yehuda the Tana and Rabbi Yossi the Tana seem to have a very similar machlokes to these two Amoraim, Rav Huna and Rav Yitzchak, in terms of whether you say you look at the start of Shabbos or you look at any change that occurred during Shabbos to determine what the din is. This is a Mishnah that we have later on in the Masechta on Daf Tzadi Dalet. And it says over there, Chotzer Shenifritza Mishtei Ruchosel. If you have a yard that two of the walls broke down, now if one of the walls broke down, it's not a problem, as long as the breach is not more than 10 amos, so then it's called the Pesach. So here you're talking about, the Mefarshim explained, you can see this in diagrams, in the art scroll, as well in the Pirush Chai and in the Illustrated Gemara, that we're talking that the wall broke down along a corner. So now, this Pirtza, this breach over here, is considered a significant breach. People will bypass the normal Pesach and they'll go through here. So if you have a Chotzer, Shenifritza Mishtei Ruchosa, it's breached on two sides in a corner. V'chein Bayis Shenifritza Mishtei Ruchosa. Likewise, if a house is breached in the corner, V'chein Mavoi Shenitlu Karosav Olechyav, or you have a Mavoi that on Shabbos, the Koru Olechy that matched it was taken away. In all of these situations, there was a perfectly good mechitza surrounding either the house, the courtyard, or the mavui at the start of Shabbos, and you could carry within this area, and something happened on Shabbos to make it go away. So what's the din? This is a machlokes tanaim. Mutarim leos Shabbos. The first opinion says that you're allowed to go and carry this in this area, the house, the courtyard, or the mavui, the rest of Shabbos. Because once it was good at the beginning of Shabbos, you're allowed to go and carry it for the rest of that Shabbos. Mutarim leos Shabbos. However, for next Shabbos, it's no good. That's certainly also level. Divrei Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda's opinion is that you look at the beginning of this Shabbos, it was good for the beginning of this Shabbos, it's good for the rest of this Shabbos. However, of course, for next Shabbos, it's no good. So Rav Yehuda says, you look at the beginning of Shabbos. Shabbos Goremis, which we wanted to say before, was Rav Huna's Shita, that Shabbos is Goremis. So we're going to try to align Rav Huna, the Amora, with Rabbi Yehuda, the Tana. And likewise, Rabbi Yossi Omer, now his language is a little bit poetic here, he says, in Mutar Liosa Shabbos, Mutar Liosa Lavo. He says, if you would be allowed to go and carry that Shabbos, you should be allowed to carry it forever. But of course you can't carry it forever, because there's no mechitza. How can you possibly suggest that next Shabbos you can carry, because last Shabbos there was a mechitza, this Shabbos there's no mechitza. So therefore, Rabbi Yossi is really saying, V'masur Liosa Lavo, if you can't carry next Shabbos, then you can't even carry the rest of this Shabbos, Asur Liosa Shabbos. So you can only carry if there's a mechitza up until the time that the mechitza is there. If in fact the mechitza went down in the middle of Shabbos, so that stops you from carrying there. In other words, diurin, you look at the number of people that are there in the machlokis that we had between Rav Huna and Rav Yitzchak, and Rav Yitzchak said there, you look at the diurin, you look at the people, you look at the change that happened in Shabbos, and that's like the opinion over here of Rav Yossi. So we want to align the opinion of Rav Yitzchak, the Amora, with the Tana Rav Yossi, that you look at things as they are. Look at it in Shabbos. If it changes in the middle of Shabbos, so then the din changes. As opposed to the opinion of Rav Huna, the Amora, and Rabbi Yehuda, the Tana, that says, you look at it at the beginning of Shabbos. If it's good at the beginning of Shabbos, it's good forever. And that's what the Gemara now says. Lema, Rav Huna, the Amak Rav Yehuda. Let us suggest that Rav Huna is like the opinion of the Tana, Rabbi Yehuda, as I pointed out. The Rav Yitzchak, the Amora, the Amak Rav Yossi, the Tana. Let us say the Yamachuk Samaraim lines up perfectly with the Machlokis of the Tanaim. But the Gemara says, no. Each of the Amoraim says, I can hold like both Shitas. Of like Rav Huna says, no. And no, I hold not only, of course, like Rabbi Yehuda the Tana, but I can even hold like Rav Yossi the Tana. I know the Amoraim, I feel the Rav Yossi. My Shita is fine, even according to Rav Yossi. Why is that? Because why did Rav Yossi say in his situation that you're not allowed to carry in this area where the house or the courtyard or the mavui lost its mechitza. Because ad kan lo kamar Rabbi Yossi asam. Rabbi Yossi said over there, you can't carry anymore. Ella de listenu le mechitzos, because there are no mechitzos anymore. That's why you can't carry. But in my case here, it's talking about people. The mechitzos is still there. I said, if you had three people, and now you have two people, well, the mechitzos is still there, and you go by the Shabbos Goremes, you go by the beginning of Shabbos. Rav Yossi would not disagree with that. Hocha is nehul mechitzos, and therefore Rav Yossi would agree with me. So you don't have to lock me into only holding like Rabbi Yehuda. I could even hold like Rav Yossi. That's what Rav Huna would say. So he says it's not a machlokes tanoim like it's a machlokes amarai. And similarly, Rav Yitzchak Amar, same thing. I know the Amar filu Rav Yehuda. Don't lock me into only holding like the Tana Rav Yossi, but I could even hold like the Tana Rabbi Yehuda. Why is that? Because ad kan lo kam Rav Yehuda asam. The only reason Rav Yehuda said in the situation there when you had the house, the chotzer or the mavui, and the walls fell down, you know why he said you can still carry? Because ela di isnu le di yurim. Because all the people are still there. We don't look at the walls, we look at the people. So halacha too, listenu l'diyurin. Here, in our case, the person died. So you went from three to two. So he would agree with me that when you go from three people to two people, you now change the din. You don't say, well, it was good at the beginning of Shabbos, so it's good now as well. So each of these habarayim, Rav Yitzchak and Rav Huna, doesn't want to be locked into saying that they can only hold like one tana. Each of them would argue they can hold like both tanoyim. Then the Gemara concludes by quoting the Mishnah. We said, "V'chachamim echlet mishnei dvarim." The Chacham said that you can use either the horizontal mechitza, the ropes that are attached to the poles, 2.9, 2.9, 2.9, if you remember from yesterday's shir, or you can use the vertical posts as long as they're within 2.9 of each other. There's less than three tefachim between them. So through the principle of lavud, both the horizontal alone or the vertical alone are perfectly good. That was the opinion of the second Tana Kama Chachamim. And then we had Rav Yosef Yehuda that disagreed. He said you need both. Now, it seems that the Tanakama of Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanakama of Yosef Yehuda are saying the same thing. And that's what the Gemara says. Hayu Tanakama. Why did you have to repeat this again? The Chacham Omrim Echod Mishnei Dvarim, either horizontal or vertical is good. That's what the first Tanakama said. What's the difference between the two Tanakamas? So the Gemara says, No Ika Benayu Yochid B'Yishuv. There is a difference between them. And you can see this in Rashi. Dibro Maskel Ika Benayu Yochid B'Yishuv. The Tanakama Dekomar Lo Dibru B'Shayara Ela Behoveh. The first Tana Kama it said, it only meant the Shayara because that's the common scenario, but the same thing would apply for a Yachid, Ul Olam Yachid Nami Mutter. He says that an individual will also be allowed to take advantage of either the horizontal or the vertical post. And the only reason he said it's by Divrei Yehuda is talking about by a Shayara because that's the common place where such a thing would happen because Yachid is Dumi, the Shayara, the Bederech, when he's on the road, he also may need it. But not when he's in his house. Neither of them, when they're in the houses, would ever make this temporary type of a mechitza because they'll put up a real fence. They can make a real fence. So that's the first Tanakama. And the second Tanakama, Rabbanan's Basrai, the one who's the Tanakama of Yosef Yehuda, Amilse, the Rav Yosef Yehuda call Mahadre. They're responding to Rav Yosef Yehuda to say that under no circumstances can he use anything other than horizontal and vertical posts, the kamar iu ain't a mechitza lo ba derech lo ba yishav. It doesn't work at all. Army le rabbanon and the rabbanon here say no. Echad mishmei dvarim. They say one of the two works, either oshasi, either the vertical or erev or the horizontal mechitza. It's a perfectly good mechitza. Echad yachad yechad rabban. Whether it's for an individual or for a shayara or beim derech or beim yishav. Whether it's in the house or on the road. So that's the slight difference between the Tanakama of Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanakama of Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Yehuda. Now we go on to the next Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Arba Dvarim Patru B'Machaneh. There are four special takonos that the rabbis set up that don't apply when you're dealing with an army, when you're dealing with a machaneh. A machaneh means an army. So when you're dealing with a garrison, when you're dealing with troops, so there are certain rabbinical stringencies that the rabbis put into effect that don't apply for an army. And what are these? Number one, mevi'in eitzim mikol makom, the army is allowed to go take wood from any place. We'll see. This is taking somebody else's wood. How are you allowed to do this? Special exemption for an army, which normally wouldn't be allowed. Tomorrow we'll explain exactly what we're talking about. Number two, opturin mirchitzis yadayim. They don't have to wash mayim rishonim. They don't have to do netilas yadayim. We'll see, again, what exactly this is talking about. But a special dispensation for an army not to follow this din derabon. Likewise, umi demai. Demai is du mai. What is its status? We mentioned many times in the past that Normally, everybody took off Trumas and Maisers, but then there came a time that there was some Amaratzim that were suspect for not wanting to take off 10%. They always took off Truma because Truma, Chit Achas Poteres HaSakri, you could have one kernel, so nobody would be taking a chance on something that you Chayiv Misa B'dei Shamayim for by not taking off one kernel. But Maiser Rishon is 10%, so there were Amaratzim, a small percentage, but still some who didn't want to take it off. So therefore, all of the Amaratzim became suspect, and therefore, Dumai, we always had the question, what is the status? Did they or did they not take off? And the rabbi said, you have to take off again, Truma Semaisos al Sofik. So that's called Dumai. So the rabbis instituted the Din of Dumai, but they didn't institute it for an army. An army doesn't have to take Dumai a second time, take off Truma Semaisos. And finally, Umul Arev, they don't have to go make an Arev. We'll see exactly what this is talking about in the Gemara. Gemara starts off by bringing in a brisa that parallels our Mishnah. Tana Rabbanan, and says in the brisa, "Machane hayosis l'muchames horishus." If an army goes out to fight a voluntary battle, as opposed to a muchames mitzvah has different dinim. During the days of Yoshua, there was muchames mitzvah during the Zion Kibush, during the 7 days of capture, 7 years of capturing Eretz Yisrael. So that was a muchames mitzvah. There are other times when it's a muchames mitzvah, but then there are other times when we just need to expand the land. We need to go prophylactically go and attack somebody before they attack us. So in this situation, it's called a Muhemes Rishus, and therefore, there are different rules. So when you're going out to fight a Muhemes Rishus, so the army is allowed to go and take wood. Mutarim begezel eight simivation. They can take even stealing wood, there was dried wood, which somebody, Mestamba, was going to use for themselves, and you're allowed to use it. Again, the Gemara will explain this more in a moment. Along comes Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema, and he adds, Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema, Omer, they're allowed to make their encampment in any place that they want, even on private property of somebody else. And the second din that he tells us is that Rahman Wutzlan, if somebody dies, they're entitled to be buried right there where they died, even if it's somebody's property. Now, we start off and explain this price. It says, Mutarim Begezel Eitzim Yevashim, you're allowed to go and take dried wood, and it's even though it's Gezel, so you're allowed to do this. So Gemara says, really, was this a takana especially for Muhammad? This was one of the 10 takanas that Yeshua ben Nun set up when we went into Eretz Yisrael. As the Gemara in Baba Kama outlines on Daf Pei, 10 famous takanas that Ezra made in order to facilitate Yish of Eretz Yisrael, to make sure that people are very comfortable living in Eretz Yisrael. So he made these 10 takanos. And one of them was this din, Haitakanta the Yeshua. What are you telling me that they made a special din over here for armies? This was something that Yeshua ben Nun already made. Damar, Yeshua ben Nun said, we learned in another statement, Asara Tanoim Hisnu Yoshua, the great Yoshua, when he conquered Eretz Yisrael, so he made 10 conditions that everybody in Eretz Yisrael was entitled to these leniencies. Number one, Shiyu Marin Bechorshit, you're allowed to go and pass your animals in somebody's forest, because normally that's not something that anybody would care about. So Yoshua ben Nun said, we're not going to let people care about it, since most people don't care about it. So this is to facilitate people living in Eretz Yisrael. They'll have lots of ample pasture for their animals, so you can go pasture in forests, even though they may be owned by somebody, because nobody really cares. It's my forest. I don't really care if you're out there. And umelakdim eitzim misadoseim, and you're even allowed to go take wood from those fields, those forests. So this is their wood. So this is already something that Yoshua ben Nun said. So what are you telling me? This is a special army enactment. So Gemara says, no. Hosom behizmi behigi. When Yoshua ben Nun allowed it, he only allowed you to take these thistles and thorns, these little pieces of twigs, but not real trees. And now, for the army, hocha bishari eitzim, the army, they let them take even big pieces of wood that belong to other people. Gemara says, that's teretz number one. There's two other terutzim. Inami, hosom bimichubarim. There, in Yoshua ben Nun, he said it's only you're allowed to go and take it if it's attached to the ground. But if somebody went and harvested it, so then he obviously wants it for himself. You wouldn't be allowed to take it based upon Yoshua's takana. So here, the army takana is hocha bitlushim, that in addition to being allowed from Yoshua ben Nun to take those that are still attached to the ground, here you're even allowed to go take it if somebody harvested it because of the rules of army. So they made a special takana for the army to make it easier for the soldiers. Inami, alternatively, terence number three, hasim belachim. That in Yoshua's days was referring to wood that was wet. If it's wet, so then nobody really wants it. So therefore, it will burn in a hesed gadol, it will burn in a big fire, but it's not going to be useful for a small campfire. So therefore, Yoshua ben Nun said, in that situation, nobody really cares about it, and you can take this wet wood. But here, we're talking about hocha b'yevashim, for the army, they even let you take dry wood, which people would want. And nevertheless, for the army, we made a special takana that you're allowed to take it. Now the Gemara says, Rehudim and Tema Omer, Avchonim b'chol makom. Rehudim and Tema said two things. Well, you're allowed to go sleep wherever you want. In other words, you're going to camp on somebody's private property. And Nebuch, Rechmanu Litzlanu, b'mokim shenargum b'shom nikbarim. If somebody dies, he's allowed to be buried right there in that place. We don't have to so to say, purchased the right to be buried in that place. Gemara says, Pshita, Meis Mitzvah, who, this is a regular din of Meis Mitzvah. We have a rule that Meis Mitzvah, Kone Mekomo, if somebody Nebuch dies, so he's allowed to go and be buried right where he dies, if he's a Meis Mitzvah, and if he doesn't have any relatives to go and bury him. So he's allowed to be buried right then and there. Otherwise, everybody's going to walk away. Nobody's going to want to have to go and purchase a lot. So therefore, there's a special dispensation for a Meis Mitzvah that can be buried right there. So what are you telling me? This is an army special Takana. This is the general rule of Meis Mitzvah. So I says, no, it's not. Lo Tzricha, we need this over here because even though we turn to the Amid Beis, this Lake Kovrim, even though these soldiers have somebody that will go and bury them, so they're not a Meis Mitzvah, nevertheless, even in this situation, you'll have to go bury them right there where they Nebuch fell. Because we learned, the Tanya, Eizu Meis Mitzvah, what's the definition of a Meis Mitzvah? Somebody that has nobody to bury him. Kosha Ein Lo Kovrim, there's nobody to bury him. He has no relatives there, there's no friends there, nobody's going to bury him. And therefore, he's entitled to be buried right where he is. So people will go and do this chesed, but they're not going to have to pay money for the cemetery site. So Kosha Ein Lo Kovrim, that's a Meis Mitzvah. Kore Vacherim Onoso, but if you were to call out and say, does anybody know this person? Are there any relatives here? And people would answer, so... Well, it's the responsibility for the relatives to go bury their relative. So therefore, that's not called the Meis Mitzvah. It's a Meis Mitzvah, and a person doesn't have the right to go be buried on somebody else's property in that situation. So here, the Chiddush is, even though the soldier has people that would bury him, nevertheless, he's entitled to be buried right where he Nebuch passes away. So Gemara says, really? Meis Mitzvah kone makomo? Doesn't Meis Mitzvah have the right to be buried wherever he is? I'll show you that that's not true. But Tanya, the Brisa says, Hamotzi Meis Muto B'Sratya, if you find a Meis that Nebuch is lying dead on the highway, Sratya we said is a highway, so Mifanin Mifanehu Liamin is Sratya, or the smallest Sratya. You don't keep him buried right in the middle of the highway, but you move him to the right or to the left. Now this seems to go against the idea that Meis Mitzvah is Kone Mekomo. So how come he's not buried right there in the middle of the highway? So the Mefarshim explained that the reason why you're allowed to move him is because of the concern of Tumas Kohanim. So the Kohanim that are going to pass over this road, if the body is lying directly over the entire area, so then you're not going to be able to traverse this road, and it's going to be Matami, the Kohanim, and any Kutchim that they have. So that'll be ultimately the answer. But here's the question. You see that the Meis Mitzvah is not Kone Mekomo. He's allowed to be moved. So that's the question. And it says, you move him, Tanya, Hamotzi Meis Muto B'Sratcha, if you find the dead person lying in the middle of the highway, so Mifaneo Liyamin is Sratcha or the smallest Sratcha. Again, as I said, you're allowed to move him to the right or to the left of the highway. Now, which way do you decide to move him to the right or to the left? Stay boor or stay near. If you have an empty field, a fallow field on one side, and a plowed field on the other side, so they've already spent a lot of time going and moving him, plowing that field, so don't bury him in the plowed field. Go bury him in the empty field, in the fallow field. Mifaneo, let's stay boor. Therefore, that's where you should preferably bury him. Once you have to move him, so bury him on the less problematic side. If you have a choice between a stay near a plowed field and a stay zera, a planted field. So then, again, bury this person in the plowed field that hasn't been planted. But Faneil, the stay near. Again, less of a disruption to the people. And if you have an equal choice, so shteim niros, or shteim zros, or shteim baros, if both sides of the field are plowed, or both sides of the fields are actually planted, or both sides of the fields are totally fallow, so then, mefaneil chorul shirtz, then they're not really helping one way or the other, you're allowed to go and bury on one side. You don't bury in the middle because of the reasons that we're about to say, but that's the question. You're allowed to move this. How come? Meis Mitzvah's Kone Mekomo, so how can you tell me that you're allowed to move it? So Gemara says, the answer that I alluded to before, Amar Rabibi, Hacha b'meis mutal ala meitzer askin, and Rabibi says that we're dealing here with the meis is totally directly across the entire highway. As Rashi points out in this situation, Shemushkav b'rochav haderech, mimeitzer lemeitzer. The body is lying nebuch, the head is on one end of the highway, and the feet are on the other end of the highway, and therefore, mitoch shenitam rishus lefanosim b'nei ha-kohanim, since the Kohanim can't traverse this road now without becoming, if you bury him right where he is, so then the Kohanim would be traveling over a grave, and all the Kohanim would become tummy, which is not allowed to do, of course, and any kachim that they have with them, Trumas and Maisers, kachim, would be ruined. Boset Taharos, and anything that they're doing here would be a problem. Shlo Yahilu Allah, they shouldn't be Trumas Ohel by going over this kever. And therefore, the rabbi said, even though Meis Mitzvah is Kone Mekomo, here there's a special dispensation to move the Meis. Once you're moving the Meis, so then go move it to the most convenient place. So, therefore, you have the right to move it to the right or to the left based upon the criteria that we just said. Then we quote the Mishnah that said, "Upaturim yuchitzis adayim." The next thing that the Mishnah would said, the four takonos that the rabbi set up that are not applicable to an army, was we said that the rabbi set up this concept of washing netilas yadayim, yuchitzis yadayim, which doesn't apply to an army. So Amar Abaye qualifies it and says, "Loshanu elamayim rishonim." As I already alluded to, this is only talking about mayim rishonim. This is talking about washing hands before you say hamotzi. However, avomai machronim, washing your hands before you bench, chova. That is stricter, actually, according to this opinion. And therefore, the rabbi still insisted that you do mayim achronim, because as we'll see, that was because of sakana, for danger purposes, so they weren't going to remove that. But mayim rishonim, which was for mitzvah purposes of washing al tilas yadayim, so therefore the rabbis were willing to give that up for an army where it may be difficult to do so. That's the statement that Abaye qualified our Mishnah. Amru Chiya Barashi, Ruchi Barashi said, Mipnei ma amru mayim achronim chova. Why did the rabbis insist that even when it's difficult, an army still has to do mayim achronim? Because of sakana. Mipnei shemelach sedomis yeshem esame esweinayim. Because there is this type of a salt called melach sedomis, this salt that comes from stone. Then Mepharshim bring down lab dafka that only comes from Sodom. It could be any type of salt that is very dangerous. Not because of high blood pressure, but because if you get it into your eyes, this salt can damage your eyes and can cause blindness. So therefore, you had to wash your hands after the meal. They would have the custom that Rashi explains that after the meal, they would go and put their hands in salt, and therefore, achar kol achilosko echo melach, there was a custom that's brought down more in brachos, that they would have salt after their meal, and therefore, mishum melach shetova bo its bo, because their fingertips may have had salt on them, and then they would touch their eyes, so tiknu mayim achronim. That's why the rabbi set up mayim achronim. That's one of the two reasons why the rabbi set up mayim achronim. The other reason being that if your hands are dirty from the food, so it's pasnish, it's improper to go bench when your dirty hands, your hands are dirty. So therefore, they set up for these two reasons, mayim achronim is a chova. And Amar Abaye adds, umishtakel kekurta bekora, that you have even a small amount of the salt, only a quart's worth, which is a very small amount, and a quart, which is a very large amount of salt. So even though you only have a small amount of this very dangerous salt, in a quart of melach, and 30 saw worth of melach, you only have this small amount, a quart's worth of this very, very dangerous salt. Nevertheless, you have to wash mayim achronim. And therefore, that's why, even though they did away with the requirement to do mayim rishonim, they didn't do away with the requirement to do mayim achronim. Now, Tosus brings down, achshav lo nagu b'mayim achronim. Nowadays, according to some, although it's not the way it's brought down in Shulchan Aruch, there are people that follow this Tosus l'maisa and don't wash mayim achronim, that medakti to wash mayim achronim, although it is brought down in Shulchan Aruch, mayim achronim is chova, and simple reading of Shulchan Aruch is that you absolutely should wash mayim achronim. But those who follow this opinion of Tosos say that nowadays we don't have this type of dangerous salt, the ein melach sedomis matzui b'neinu, and therefore we don't need to be concerned about mayim achronim. Alternatively, inami lefi she'enonu regilim letavet letzbo seinu b'melach acharachila. Or the alternative is, even if we do have this salt, we don't dip our fingers in this salt after we eat, like they used to in those days. So for either of these two reasons, the melech sedomis is not a problem. What about the other reason that I brought down? There is another reason. It says you shouldn't make a bracha, you shouldn't bench with your dayim misuavos, with your hands being filthy and shmutzedik. So you have all the grease on your hands. So the answer to that some people give is, well, today we eat with knives and forks, so our hands don't necessarily get dirty. Nevertheless, in Shulchan Aruch, it is brought down not like this Tosos, and not like that opinion that says you don't have to wash mayim achronim, and it is brought down in Shulchan Aruch that a person should wash mayim achronim. Again, each person should ask his own rav what to do halacha l'maisa. The simple reading is you absolutely should. There's no bracha on it. There's absolutely no downside to washing mayim achronim, and many, many strongly recommend that you do so, and you will be following the Shulchan Aruch if you do so as well. Mark continues and says, Amalei Rav Acha, bring the Rav Rav Ashi. Rav Acha, who is the son of Rav, said to Rav Ashi, what about a person who's Kail? Kail means that he measures out, Rashi explains, Modad Melach. So a person measures out salt, Kail Milcha, Milcha salt. My, do you have to wash your hands after you do that? So the Gemara says, Amalei, Rav Ashi responds to him and he says, of course, Halom Abaya, that question never even got off the ground. Of course you should. If you just maybe touch the salt when you're eating, so you have to wash your hands, so Allah has kama v'kama. If you're measuring out such salt, it's definitely getting on your hands. In this situation, you definitely should wash your hands. Rashi even has the gear, so kol shekein, certainly the tzorich, that you should go and wash your hands. Gemara continues and said, in the Mishnah we said that also the rabbinical decree of demai doesn't apply to an army. Umi demai, the army doesn't have to go and take off a second set of maestros because maybe the Amoratzim didn't take it off. The army can go eat it straight out. Mor says, Ditnan, because we learned in the Mishnah, in Demai, it says, Machilin Asaniim Demai. You'll have to go and feed poor people Demai. They also don't have to take off a second set of maestros. Likewise, Vesachsanya Demai. It says, soldiers. This, according to some, is talking about Jewish soldiers. According to others, is talking about Goyish soldiers. In any event, you also don't have to take off a second set of maestros when you're giving it to them. So this is the reason in our Mishnah that you don't have to go and take off the mai a second time for soldiers, even though for regular people, you do have to be concerned that the Amoratzim didn't take off Trumas of Maestros. Rav Huna says, Tano, we learned in a Braisa, Beishamai Omri, and Beishamai's opinion is, Ein Machilin Asoni and Demai. No, poor people, you can't give them Demai. And likewise, Ve'asach Sanya, Demai. You can't give the army, you can't give the soldiers Demai. Beis Hillel disagrees. Beis Hillel Omri, Machilin Asoni and Demai, Ve'asach Sanya Demai. Beis Hillel's opinion is on Mishnah that you're allowed to go give the soldiers or poor people Demai. Tosus asks over here, why in the world did we just bring this down? Lo Shayach Kan Lahakshos, you can't ask over here, the Chitaim of the Beishamai also Lashminan? Is the reason here to tell me the opinion of Beishamai? Is that why you're telling me this? Who cares? We don't pass it like Beishamai. So Tosus answers, no, the Chiddush is the Kamashulan. Why are you telling me that this is Beishamai's opinion? Because the Mishkachas Tonad Omar Ein Machilin, because if somebody were to find an unnamed opinion, a Tanoic opinion that says you're not allowed to feed the army or the poor people Demai, you might say, ooh, this is another opinion, and we have to be concerned about it. So the Tosfos says, that's what Gemara is telling to us, lo teich l'shlo, we shouldn't be concerned about it, because it's the opinion of the Beis Shammai. And we have find this similar teretz elsewhere in the Gemara in Yevamos, that sometimes it will tell us a seemingly unnecessary statement that the Beis Shammai argues with this opinion, not that we don't want to hear Beis Shammai's opinion, but it's not that important, because it's not halacha l'maisa, but sometimes it wants to specifically tell us this, because we are concerned that if we don't know that this is Beis Shammai's opinion, and then we find it as an unnamed opinion, people will think that it's a valid Tanoic opinion that we could rely upon, halacha l'maisa, but if it's Beis Shammai's opinion, we don't. Then we quote the fourth and final takana in the Mishnah that was made for regular people, but not for soldiers. Umila arev, they don't have to make an erev. So what type of erev are we talking about? Amri de Rivayane, in the Beis Medrash of Rivayane, they said, we're not talking here, lo shanu elo eruve chatzeros, that the army doesn't have to make an erev chatzeros. Midor Raisa, you're allowed to carry there. Midor Rabbanan, the rabbi said, make an erev chatzeros. For an army, they didn't insist that that be done. However, avol eruve techumim, if the army wants to travel outside, again, it's not talking about pikuach nefashos, then of course you don't need anything. But if the army's in camping and they want to travel beyond the tchum, so they need to make an eruv techumim. Chayovim, that they do have to do. The rabbis didn't dispense with eruve techumim. Why not? Because the Torah Ruchia, because Ruchia learned, lokin al eruve techumim devar Torah. This goes like the opinion that says that techum is the araisa. This is the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. It's not the opinion that's accepted of Lochla Maisa, but there is an opinion of Rabbi Akiva that says that Tchum is a Din Daraisa. And therefore, since this is a Din Daraisa, you can't just dispense with it because the rabbi said, well, it's an army, so let's dispense with our Durabbanan. So Durabbanan, they can dispense with, but they can't dispense with a Daraisa. More questions. It's Maskeplor of Yonason. Yonason says, wait a second. V'chilokin alav sheba'al? When we use the terminology al, for example, in the Pasuk where it says, al yetze ish mi mekomo, it uses the terminology, do not, al, do not go out from your place. So do we really give, Rav Yonason says, malchus in a situation where we have the word al? The word al isn't for malchus. When it says alo sase, so then you get malchus. But if it says al, we don't give malchus. That's what Yonason's question is. And here, by tchum, it says, al yetze ish mi mekomo. So we shouldn't give malchus on this. So what did Ruchia say? That lokin al eri v'tchum in Devar Torah. So the Gemara says, no. Maskev Rav Achav Yaakov. Rav Achav Yaakov says, no. Rav Yonason, you're wrong. Now, if what you're saying is right, that you don't give Malkus whenever it says al, so then, when the Pasuk tells us, Dilsib, al tifnu el ho'ovos vel ha'yidonim, when people do various types of black magic, necromancy, so you're not allowed to go and do these practices. So the Torah tells us, these are lavim da'araisa, hochanami de lo loki. If a person does the Maisei Kishuv called Ov, or the Maisei Kishuv called Yedoni. These are various types of divining using various parts of the body and bones and all sorts of things that we learn about in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Should not be right now. So, is it true in this situation if a person does Ov or Yedoni type of necromancy, Hachanami de Loloki, he wouldn't get Malkus? Of course he would. So, what are you telling me? It says the word Al, Al Tifnu. So, you get Malkus. So, too, over here, Al Yesi Yishmi Mekomo. Of course you get Malkus. What are you talking about, Rav Yonason? Someone says, no, Rav Yonason Hachi Kukashle. This is what Rav Yonason was talking about. Lav Shenitan Liasoros Mises Basedin. These are capital crimes. And therefore, That's why it says, if you use the lashon of al, you need it for an asara. Ain onshin elo im kein masirin. So v'chol lav shenita le'asara smisas beistin ain lokan alav. So if these are all capital crimes over here, so then you can't give malchus for al. So why is Rechia telling us that lokan aleiru v'tichum in Dvar Torah, this is the iser that you need to have a warning for before you can give the capital crime? So what is the question that Rav Yonasan is asking? Is what is Ruchia saying that you get malchus for this? It's a lav shenita lasaros misas based, and you need this to be the warning that you, if you do this, you're going to be chayav misas based it, and therefore ain lokan alav, you shouldn't be chayav malchus for it. That's Rav Yonasan's question. So Rav Ashi answers, Rav Ashi tells us no, mikasiv al yotzi, this is not a capital crime. Even if you want to say the tchum is an issa daraisa, it's not a capital crime. It's an issa daraisa, but not a capital punishment. You're not talking about carrying. Carrying would be, if it had said, al yotzi, mikasiv al yotzi, it doesn't say you can't carry, it says al yetzi, you can't go beyond. And nobody holds, even if you want to say it's an issa daraisa, traveling beyond the tchum is a capital crime. Therefore, you don't need this for the asorah, ain onshin elokim asirin. Therefore, it could be for malchus purposes, exactly as Rav Chiya said, lokin alei revit tchumim devar Torah. With this, we conclude the first beautiful parak of Erevin, Hadron Lechamovi, Hadron Lechamovi, Hadron Lechamovi, and Be'ezus Hashem will start off with the next parak, which deals with the Pasi Biros that we've talked about till now in a number of situations. With that, we conclude today's shir.